Okay, we had left off last time just going over the objectives. I don't want to spend too much more time looking at that, but we're going to cover a lot of these things in the introduction. Just by way of review, just some important questions. You know, we're studying Psalms, and this is, you know, as we said, this is not just a class about the book of Psalms, but also in songs in general. And the prayers and what forth that are in the Bible, and we talked about, you know, why are we studying this, and of course one of my main goals in this class is so that we can all, you know, better our spiritual worship to God in multiple facets, and that should be really the aim of a lot of our studies. But in this particular study, it's kind of interesting because we can see something a little bit different than what sometimes you study in the Bible, and that is instead of just finding some history or instead of just studying a doctrinal issue, we're going to be looking at individuals that are not only have these songs that are used in their worship, but it contains history and it contains their feelings and emotions. It contains different ways in which we worship God. So we talked about that last time. Now, one of the things that is very important, and as we look in to the history of Psalms later on in this lesson, is something we talked about, and that was, talk to somebody today, and they say, "Well, how do we know about this book of Psalms? Is it inspired? What are some ways that we talked about the book of Psalms as being inspired? How can we know that this should be part of our Bible and this is from God?"
New Testament refers to it.
New Testament refers to. Specifically, Jesus refers to it, right?
Peter on the day of Pentecost refers to David's writings.
All right, Peter refers to David's writings. We have that as an example. And then we talked about something in history.
Actually used in worship.
Okay.
It
was actually used in worship. Okay, so we have like the instruction to worship in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. But there's something else that I mentioned in history that we know. Or I say it's history. In applying what Jesus said.
He said, "All be fulfilled."
Sorry?
He said, "All the old law, all the old writings will be fulfilled."
Right, all the
prophets, the writings.
Mm-hmm. That the Psalms, that he was a fulfillment of the Psalms in addition to the prophets. So, and there was no dispute at that time. The Psalms had been collected, and, you know, even though we don't have, per se, an authorship in each of the Psalms, you know, we know that they're inspired. Okay. All right, let's get back to the objectives real quick. I think we left off in the last part of A. We're going to be looking today at number 10. Solo in the New Testament, and I imagine the reason why the elders wanted us to consider this is because of the controversy among people that purport that musical instruments are okay to be used in worship today. So we'll be looking at that today. Skills, a lot of these we talked about last time, about why we're doing this class, explain practical uses of Psalms for Christians today. We'll get to imprecatory psalms at the end. Those are kind of interesting because when you think about today and you think about praying this way, a lot of us, at least right now in this era of peace, of peace in our country, that is, these don't come up as much, but perhaps will be increasing. Explain what a messianic psalm is, and we'll look at various of those. And I mentioned last time also that, you know, we'll see duality in the Psalms. We'll see some that are clearly just messianic, but a lot of them, you know, you could be dual in nature. I say a lot of them. There's a few of them. Test interpretations of Psalms found in sermons, commentaries, class books. This is one objective that as we go along, we might come across examples. We will look at the structure of Psalms. We'll look at the how the Hebrew poetry is set up, and it'll help you interpret lines in the Psalm. So, and that's important in our study of the Psalms as we analyze them. And probably today we'll be looking at the authors of the Psalms, and then of course attitudes. We talked about the importance of that. Okay, so let's move on to the definition of psalm. This is page 4. So at the top of your page, I have a simple definition from Merriam-Webster. A sacred song or poem used in worship, especially one of the biblical hymns collected in the Book of Psalms. But I thought what we'd do is, the dictionary defines how we use the word today, right? So I thought what we'd start with is looking at a class definition. I wanted to get everybody's thoughts of, and I know somebody's going to rattle off some really simple answers at first, but I want you to give this a little thought. You see the word psalm, and you think of it in the context of, what we're doing here today. But what are some definitions, or what are some things that we use the word psalm to refer to?
Prayer.
Okay, I wasn't expecting that answer first, but that is a good one. Mm-hmm.
Song.
Okay, we say they're song. It's a songs.
A lot of them are very personal. They're very irrespective to the person.
Intimate.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Class participation.
They're religious. They're not just any patriotic song or whatever. It's
okay,
religious.
So when you think of psalm, you think of something religious.
Almost like a similar, back to the personal writing letter. Someone is writing a letter to God.
Okay. So kind of like a prayer, but maybe, maybe a letter or thoughts. Okay. So, you might read that in there.
It's kind of like a poem. You just have some kind of structure.
Okay, poem. Thank you.
God inspired.
Okay, so when you think of psalm, you're talking about what? When you say God-inspired.
That God has impacted this person in a way to get them to try to talk to him as they are in their song.
Okay, so if I come up with a song, then that's God-inspired.
It's the kind of a different way to spin off the word inspired. You've been inspired by what you've read to write about, write to God as you would.
Okay, I'm gonna fill in your answer, Josh. Okay, I don't know if you see this. Okay, so we have the Book of Psalms, right? Because nobody said that yet. I didn't think about the psalm, but so we said inspired by God, right? Okay, so we have the Book of Psalms. Okay, we talked a little bit about the different categories of psalms. We'll get more into that, but is there anything anybody else thinks of when they think of the word psalm?
I guess hymn.
Okay. So we're back to something religious, songs, hymns.
The Hebrew title to the book is praises.
Yeah, praises. That's what we're talking about. And in fact, like Psalm 150, we have just all that litigation of praises. And when these songs are sung, right, they're not just some kind of, or spoken or prayed, they're not just some kind of, demonstration of poetry when we talk about in the Bible. They were collected for a purpose, and that purpose was to be used to worship God. So we need to remember that. So when I think of Psalm also, you know, we talk about to the worship or glory of God. Now, whether it be something that contains matters of history, whether it be something that's something like an imprecatory prayer, even in those cases, the subject and the subject of that prayer, or if you will, the recipient of that prayer is God. So, in some form or fashion, you know, our reliance is on the Almighty God, and so that's important to look at. So let's look a little bit further at a biblical definition, and this is one that's been mentioned here. Let's look over at Psalm chapter 72. Psalm chapter 72 and verse 20. It's the end of book 2, which these psalms are organized, and we'll look at that. The prayers of David, the son of Jesse, are ended. The prayers. You can note, if you have a superscription just on this psalm alone, that this psalm was not written by David. It was a psalm of Solomon. So, you know, here you have the end of book 2 as he arranged them, and he called them prayers. So he would use this term to describe what the psalms were. In fact, if you look over at Psalm 3, for example, just an example, one of these, your title of Psalm 3 in your that was added there by your publisher may say different things. Mine says a morning prayer of trusting God. Of course, that's not that was just put in by the publisher. But you can see when the psalms were assembled, you had them conscripted, a psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. And then you have, if you start reading Psalm 3, O Lord, how my adversaries have increased, many are rising up against me, many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. But thou, O Lord, art a shield about me, my glory and the one who lifts my head. I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all my enemies on the cheek. Thou hast shattered the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Thy blessing be upon thy people. So here we see a clear example when David was in trouble and he was praying to God. And he's asking the Lord to deliver him. So we can see from, you know, these passages that a biblical definition is prayer. And as you start reading the Psalms, and you guys are well aware that many of the Psalms you will find direct addressing of the Almighty in a prayer form. Look also at Habakkuk. Chapter 3. And look at verse 1. A prayer of Habakkuk the prophet according to Shigionoth. Lord, I have heard the report about you, and I fear. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. So here we have a prayer that Habakkuk is offering up to God. And then we have, look down all the way at the end at verse 19. The Lord God is my strength, and he has made my feet like hinds' feet, and makes me walk on high places. For the choir director on my stringed instruments. So this was a prayer that was used in worship to be sung. We'll be looking at several superscriptions, even today, where in the Psalms we see that they were to be used in worship, because you have a, you know, a scription much like this one, to be played on musical instruments or stringed instruments. Okay. Now, what about the Hebrew words that we find for Psalms? The Hebrew Old Testament. Any questions or comments, by the way, before we move on? Okay. The Hebrew Old Testament verb is used 45 times, and it's there on your sheet. It's called zamar. And this simply means to make music. And there are two ways in which we find, and as this being defined, to make music as singing in praise and to make music as on an instrument. And if you turn over on the next page, by the way, that's according to Brown Driver Briggs, who is a Hebrew scholar, so his work, or that works of those individuals. So, zamar is 45 times, and we're not going to read, you know, all these indications, but I want to note out a few, and I want to show you how this is used in the book of, in the Old Testament. So we have there 1 Judah 5:3, I will sing praise, and then I will sing praises in 2 Samuel 22. And it's translated in 1 Chronicles as singing psalms unto him. So often you'll see as we go down here that it is, you know, used for singing, and there's no mention of, you know, like, say, musical instruments or anything. But if you continue on to Psalm 33, you'll see in verse 2, it says, sing unto him with psaltery and the instrument of 10 strings. So we'll see that singing is used in the accompaniment of instruments. And then 61:8, you know, Steve had mentioned about the book of Psalms being a book of praises in Hebrew, and you'll see this phrase a couple times surrounding this word, for I will sing praise unto thy name forever. Verse 66 and 4, I shall worship thee and shall sing unto thee, they shall sing to thy name. 71:22 is kind of interesting, because unto thee I will sing with the harp, O thou Holy One of Israel. And 71:23, notice this verse, my lips shall greatly rejoice when I sing unto them. And then Psalm 98:5, sing unto the Lord with the harp, and the voice of the psalm. And I think that's probably enough cases for us to see that in our Bibles, this word zamar is translated in such a way that, you know, it talks about singing praises, and it may be with an instrument, it may not be. Okay, so we have that. So that's the verb tense. And then we have the Hebrew noun, which is derived from this root, and it's used 57 times. And, you know, I don't... So, it looks like... can you guys see this? Right, I did that right. Mizmor. And then... if you might see this word, Mizorim, and I'm no scholar, but that's like a collection of songs, or psalms. And the noun form just simply means a melody. So if you look at page 6, real quick. These are found in the, you know, superscriptions of the psalms. And as you can see, this term, this word is just usually showing the authorship of the psalms, but there is a little variance.
I'm so sorry.
Come on in.
The next minute, it's slow.
Yeah. So, we got to...
Okay. We weren't in it. Was, sorry.
We got caught in that too. On 1960 anyway.
Yes,
So the superscription of the Psalms, you know, a Psalm of David, you see several times repeated there. Psalm 48:1, you'll notice a song and a psalm. And then Psalm 65:1, a psalm and song. And so, you know, you see that phrase repeated over and over again. That's how this noun usage is.
Question.
Sorry.
So by the time the New Testament was, in the New Testament times, when they were using this from the Septuagint, would they have had, would it, was it already split up into books with the superscriptions and everything then? I wonder if these titles would have been included.
In the Septuagint, they were.
They were?
Yeah.
Okay. The full formatting of the book and everything, it was already a part of that.
Yeah. Yes. And we'll look at the New Testament now when we consider the words that were kind of chosen, that, you know, that how the words kind of changed. But yeah, in the Hebrew, these words were present in these titles before the Septuagint.
So the reason I'm asking the question is, were they part of the content of the psalm, or were they just kind of like a song in our songbook where someone has decided to put something on later?
They were scribed. They were not. They were not direct content of the.
Of the
psalm. Not all of the psalm themselves. They were. Okay, in Old Testament worship, and we'll talk more about Old Testament worship as we go through these, but in Old Testament worship, psalms were often accompanied by harp or musical instrument. Let's look over at 1 Chronicles chapter 15. And this certainly is not the, you know, when we get to Levitical worship, it's not the first time we see instruments being used in the worship of God, but certainly inclusive. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 16. Then David spoke to the chiefs of the Levites to appoint their relatives, the singers, with instruments of music, harps, lyres, loud-sounding cymbals, to raise sounds of joy. And so you have some names here, and we'll go ahead and read these because these will come up, and you know these are going to be some of the authors of the Psalms as well. So the Levites appointed Heman, the son of Joel, and from his relatives Asaph, the son of Berechiah, and from the sons of Merari, the relatives Ethan, the son of Cushiah, and within their relatives the second rank. And there's a list of names here. Verse 19, so the singers, Heman, Asaph, and Ethan, were appointed to sound the loud cymbals of bronze. Okay, and Zechariah, Aziel, Shemarat, Jehiel, Uniel, Eliab, Messiah, and Benaniah with harps tuned to Alamoth, and Mathathiah, and these names are going to be kind of hard to read, with lyres turned to the Sheminith. I'm not very good at reading the Hebrew names. Look at verse 22. And Chenaniah, chief of the Levites, was in charge of singing, and he gave instruction in singing because he was skillful. And Berechiah and Elkanah were gatekeepers for the ark, so forth. And these other individuals, verse 24, blew the trumpets before the ark of the Lord. So you see all these different variety of individuals with different roles in the worship, as designated by David when he appointed these members that were skilled with the various instruments to perform in worship. Now, if you continue on to chapter 16 and verse 4, you can see some further details about this. And he appointed some of the Levites as ministers before the ark of the Lord, even to celebrate and to thank and praise the Lord God of Israel. And then here again you have Asaph the chief. And Asaph, you know, we'll learn a little bit more about him in just a little bit. But all these men with musical instruments, harps, lyres, and Asaph playing loud-sounding cymbals. And they blew their trumpets continually before the ark of the Lord. And on that day, David first assigned Asaph and his relatives to give thanks to the Lord. And in the very next verses is a psalm, if you will, of thanksgiving. Okay, and then if you turn over to 2 Chronicles and chapter 29 and verse 25. He then stationed the Levites in the house of the Lord with cymbals, with harps, with lyres, according to the command of David and of Gad the king's seer and of Nathan the prophet. So what do we learn from just this passage alone? What about this kind of worship? Is it man-made?
The Lord commanded it.
It was commanded. I mean, you got Nathan the prophet included in here as well. Of course, David. And Gad, who was the king seer. For the command was from the Lord and his prophets. So, this, in their national worship, this was something they were to do. They were to use these instruments in praising God. Verse 26, and the Levites stood with the musical instruments of David and the priests with the trumpets. Then Hezekiah gave the order to offer the burnt offering to the altar. And when the burnt offering began, the song of the Lord also began with trumpets, accompanied by the instruments of David, king of Israel. And while the whole assembly worshipped, the singers also sang, and the trumpets sat, and all this continued until the burnt offering was finished. So, here we have just a good indication of, while all this worship is going on, you have the playing of instruments, you have singers. The whole assembly is worshiping, and you have this music going on. That was part of their worship. Okay? Now we fast forward to the New Testament. And later on, we're going to get a little more kind of detail and personal about New Testament worship, because it applies to us today, right? I mean, we base our worship of God on the commandments that we have from Jesus and how they did things in the first century, and what we find in the New Testament. It's different. It's different. And we're going to see the difference just in the definition of the word. And there are attempts by individuals today who enjoy music and enjoy instruments and worship to try to justify using them in worship just based on this argument alone, the definition. So let's take a look at this. Any questions about Old Testament worship? We'll talk a little bit more about that in future lessons. But okay. The Greek New Testament verb is the word solo. It's you'll see Thayer's Greek lexicon included in your lesson below. And what's the first definition there? To pluck off. The second definition, to cause to vibrate by touching. To touch or strike the chord, to twang the strings of the musical instruments so that they gently vibrate. So, your religious friends will look at the word solo and say, see, you have these occurrences in the Bible 7 times. This word solo is used, and according to Thayer, it means to pluck on a string instrument. So that gives us permission to use string instruments. Well, like many resources, they can be abused. And in fact, Thayer himself says that, in New Testament times, keep reading, to celebrate the praises of God in song, James 5:13, and he refers to a translation. And by the way, we'll be looking at those various verses here in just a second. I tried to get copies off, but we ran into that wreck. But James 5:13, to sing praise. Turn over to Ephesians 5 and verse 19. Starting in verse 18, do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody with your heart to the Lord. So that word, making melody, is our word solo. Now, what some of your religious friends might say is, well, see, you play on a string instrument, but it's with your heart, and that's where your worship comes from. And that, to the extent of the heart, that's true. We do use our hearts in worship to God. But this word, when it was written in our New Testaments, did not mean to play a musical instrument. And some people, in trying to explain away musical instruments, will even go far and say, well, no, you see, solo kind of, changed the meaning a little bit, and it really means to pluck the heartstrings. Well, that may or may not be so. I want you to consider something here. We have words in our language, and I could just go back maybe 4 or 5 decades. Really easy to do. Okay, I could say that today it's very cold. I might say it's a cool day. But, you know, then I might go up to somebody I really like and I say, hey, those sunglasses look really cool. Okay, that word cool is, that second use, is kind of a modern usage. People didn't used to talk that way. They didn't say your sunglasses were cool. And we might go back and say, well, is there any reference to the fact that they're cold in temperature? Yeah, you could, you know, look at the etymology of the word and say, well, people were thought to be just really calm and cold and not reacting to, you know, things around us. And then they might say, okay, well, then we might say, well, that person's kind of cool. And then we might say, well, yeah, that's really cool. Like, that's smooth and relaxed. And, you know, but later on, people then just take it and go, oh, well, that's really cool. That's awesome. They might even say it's hot, you know. But anyway, you can see that just in the matter of 50 years, that when you say that those sunglasses are cool, you don't necessarily mean that they're cold at all. And so we need to remember this, because the Septuagint, you know, version of the Old Testament was translated, you know, many years before, and this Greek word existed long before the New Testament, or, you know, several centuries before the New Testament. And when the New Testament came along, we're looking at this word solo, and it doesn't mean, you know, this plucking or striking chords on stringed instruments. In fact, it is exclusively about singing. And I just, we'll look at the noun word here in a second, and I want to bring up some additional sources. But I have in, I'm going to make a copy of this, and we can add it to your lesson. I try to make it this morning, but I just want to point out real quick the different times in the New Testament this word is used. And I'll provide this to you guys, but I just want to read this out just to remind us. We've been through these before, you know, in our studies and those sermons. Romans 15:9, this cause I will confess thee among the Gentiles and sing unto thy name. 1 Corinthians 14:15, I will sing with the Spirit and I will sing with the understanding also. We just looked at Ephesians 5:19, singing and making melody, that's the word, in our heart to the Lord. And then James 5:13, is anyone merry, let him sing praises. So there's the verb tense. Okay? Nothing, you know, obviously about musical instruments in there, but in any event. We can also look at individuals using these words in history, and I'll talk about that in just a second, to indicate that by the time the New Testament was written, that musical instruments was not part of this word. Okay, psalmos is the noun form. And again, we can turn to Thayer's. It's used 7 times in our Bibles, in the New Testament. And it's where we derive our word psalm. You take psalmos, knock the OS off, right? So, something to remember about the word psalm. It's kind of like baptize. What are we going to do with this? Well, we're just going to transliterate it. We're just going to say, here's the word. You know, well, no. In our Bibles, baptize is actually baptized. Okay. In our language, psalm is just, hey, knock off the OS of the Greek word. Right? We have a lot of words like that. But in the Bible, it's actually translated. And that's important. We ought to look at the translations. And the translations don't say, and they psalm in their heart. You know, it's just, it doesn't say that. We say, I baptize you with the water. We don't say, I psalm with the heart. As we look, it says, sing, make melody in our heart, that sort of thing. So that's important. But psalmos is used 7 times. It's the noun form. And I just threw, that was good, Craig. I threw the verb form underneath the note. Okay. Skip that note and push it up. Okay, so the word psalmos is also in Ephesians 5:19. It's just not making melody. And if you're still there in Ephesians 5:19, it says, speaking to one another in psalms, in hymns and spiritual songs. So there's your word. But What does this mean? Well, it's simply, if you look in your Thayer's down below, according to these passages, Ephesians 5:19, Colossians 3:16, it's used of one who has it in his heart to sing or recite a song of the sort. 1 Corinthians 14:26. Can also be the plural of the book of Psalms. And so when we, you know, when we look at these words, there's nothing inherent in there about playing instruments. And again, on the lesson sheet, I'm just going to run through these real quick that I'll be giving to y'all next week when I can make copies. Luke 20:42, and David himself said in the book of Psalms, there's a book of the Psalms reference. These are all psalmos. Luke 24:44, in the law of Moses and the prophets and in the Psalms. Acts 1:20 is written in the book of Psalms. Acts 13:33, it's written in the second Psalm, Thou art my Son. 1 Corinthians 14:26, every one of you hath a psalm, hath a doctrine and revelation, hath an interpretation, that all things be done unto edifying. And then Ephesians 5:19, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. And then Colossians 3:16, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. So over and over again we see this word psalmos, which is transliterated to psalms in the noun form. Okay. I have a few internet sources I'd like to share. Actually, I say it's an internet source. I got it off the internet. This is actually a book written by Kerfees called Instrument, Music, and Worship. And it was interesting, and you can do this at home in your studies, and you can look at various writings by historians to confirm what we see in the scriptures and in the word that we have from Thayer's. But there's a work that Kerfees did called Instrumental Music and Worship in 1999. And he said that when somebody studies the etymology of I have 1999. This probably should be 1899. If Steve's saying it right. Okay, I'll have to check my resources on that. But in looking at this word solo, when one studies the etymology of this word, he will find that it's incorrect to say that every time solo was used in antiquity, it meant to play an instrument. By studying these reliable Greek lexicons and various historical documents, one soon comes to understand that the term solo has had a variety of meanings in different periods of history. In fact, the evidence indicates that even before Christ came to earth, solo no longer meant to play instruments of music. Numerous scholarly sources could be cited, but he lists three. First, he talks about Walter Bauer's highly respected lexicon, and it indicates that even the Septuagint, a Greek translation of the Old Testament, that appeared 250 years before Christ was born, it is usually the case that solo is translated only to sing. Of course, we talked about, when we looked at the Old Testament, that the words that we find, the singing that they were doing, did include musical instruments. But historians say that even when this was translated, and you notice that it said, like, sing with the harp or sing to the accompaniment of the harp. And so this word, solo, in the Greek Septuagint, historians like this one would say, well, even then it meant to sing, like, with your voice. In Henry Thayer's often quoted Greek lexicon, he's noted, by the time the events are recorded in the New Testament took place, Solomon to sing a hymn. We talked about that. Finally, Sophocles, a native Greek, and this is a professor at Harvard. He examined a plethora of secular and religious historical documents. There was not a single example of solo ever used in the time of Christ that involved or implied the use of an instrument. Rather, it always meant to chant or sing religious hymns. And that's important, folks, because when we talk about examining language throughout history, I just gave you an example. Those sunglasses are cool. If we don't consider how people use the word during the time, then we miss its meaning. And so what these historians have done is they've looked at this word, how it's used by individuals of the New Testament time in the first century, second century, and they said, hey, this word meant to sing. In fact, even before New Testament times, when the Septuagint, they say, you know, this word is, can be used exclusively of singing. Now, there's further evidence that we have. And this is really interesting. And you may know this in history. There were individuals that tried to introduce instruments in musical worship. And that was not the... And I'm going to use the word tradition here, because that's their word, but obviously we have instructions from, you know, in the Bible about what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to sing to God, but that's their word. And the traditions of the first century churches and in the second centuries, actually, there were no instruments. And so people tried to introduce instruments in the worship, and there was opposition. And we have documented people that day that talk about the opposition there was to introducing musical instruments into worship. Now, again, that was with your, you know, by the time of AD 150, you had all these individuals, and even in the time of Christ, there were people that were distorting. In the time of the apostles, there were people that were distorting the worship and introducing their own things and taking out other things. But I just mention that because it's an example of and confirmation of what we've been looking at. You know, there weren't instruments there. There are now. In a later lesson, we'll talk more about the commands we do have from God about singing. And I want to mention this right now, and I want you to start thinking about it, because I want you to think about our worship and what we've done in the past centuries. If you're aware, well, first of all, we have a songbook, right, and it's got a collection of songs, psalms, spiritual songs, right? That's biblical. We've seen that already. But how is it written? What does the songbook look like? I open up to page one. Is it just a bunch of words like we have in the Book of Psalms?
Musical notes.
Okay? When you open up your Book of Psalms in the Old Testament, do you see any musical notes? There's a few musical phrases, and we'll mention those. When we open our books today, there's notes, and that's good. You know, it's good to have music. But our a cappella singing, as we have it, is divided into how many parts?
Four.
Has it always been that way?
No.
No, obviously not. That was introduced, in fact, songbooks were introduced in this country. And then people start having their own methods of worshiping. In fact, you know how people go up there and they conduct music? That was actually, some people would adopt that as being part of the religion. And if you didn't do that, you weren't worshiping God correctly. And they would authorize their songbooks. It was probably a money-making scheme, I'm sure. But they would say, you have to use this songbook. You have to use this songbook. We'll take a closer look at that later. I say all that just to say this. When you look at our singing today, I want you to consider something. Think about what we do in our song worship. Is it authorized? Is it just about singing worship to God? Do we have to have a song leader? Do we have to have people singing four parts? Can somebody be singing a song by themselves? Can there be one part and then another part and another part? We'll talk more about that in a later lesson, but just to give it some thought in your studies. Thank you, everybody, and we'll continue there next time talking about the history and authors.